Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
But each week we've looked at kind of a different perspective. We've talked about what do we do when we fail, how do we deal with failure moving forward. And today I want to talk to you about a little bit different perspective. I want to talk to you about what do you do when somebody fails you? Because sometimes you're the failure, and then sometimes you're the recipient of an F-bomb, right? What do you do when somebody fails you? And I'm going to share a story. I've shared this before, but some of you may not have heard it before. And I think this is the first time I've shared this story and my wife has been in the room. But my wife and I, we used to live in Nebraska. It was my first assignment, first place I was hired out of college. And so out of college, we got married. 2 weeks later, we were in Nebraska. And so there was one day, I went to church. I would always go, you know, several hours before my wife. We had a service, and then we had Sunday school, and then we had another service. And so I was the youth pastor, and so I would go to the first service, and then I taught the high school, Sunday school classroom, and then my wife taught the middle school. And that day, there was a big snowstorm, a lot of snow, and so, you know, I'm waiting there for my wife to arrive. She kind of always arrives at the same time, about 15 minutes before Sunday school started, and so I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting, and 15 minutes, you know, pop up before class, and no Kate. So, you know, I get my cell phone out, and I, you know, try to call her, and no pickup, you know, and so, you know, you've left those messages before. You know, my voicemail that I leave sounds something like, you know, hey, just wondering where you are. I guess I'll see you when you get here. You know, call me back whenever you see this. And then it comes time for Sunday school to start, and she's not there, and the kids don't have a Sunday school teacher, and my wife's not there. And so you guys know whenever that happens, all of a sudden the voicemails start to change, you know, from, hey, give me a call back, to, I don't know why you're not picking up your phone right now, but you really need to call me back. And so I went through Sunday school, and no Kate. Kate did not show. And I'm really, really worried. And looking back on it now, I should have just left. I should have just left and went and tried to find her. But no Kate for the whole Sunday school class. And so I get out of Sunday school. I'm worried sick. And I go around the corner. I'm about to go leave. And I don't know, go try to find her or shoot a flare in the air. And then all of a sudden, here she comes, panting out of breath, running in. She goes, hey, sorry about that. And I just immediately, so many questions are in my mind, so many things I want to say. And so my first one is, hey, where is your phone? You know, have you ever said that to your spouse? Where is your phone? It's supposed to be attached to you, right? Where is your phone? And she said, well, I left the apartment and I left it there. I said, okay, all right, that happens, right? Everybody can understand that. Everybody's left their cell phone at home once, twice, three times. And so, okay, well, what happened to you? And she said, well, I was pulling out of the apartment complex, and all of a sudden, I went into the intersection, and I started to turn, and then my car died. And I said, okay, so your car died. Well, what'd you do? You know, I'm thinking, well, maybe I'll be proud. You know, maybe she booted it up, you know, something I don't know how to do, but you know, maybe she restarted it or something. And she's like, well, it was snowing and everything, and my car was broken down, and I got out and looked at it, and this nice man just pulled up and said, hey, I'll take you wherever you want to go. I said, yeah, and so you told them, no thanks, my apartment is 50 feet that way, I'll walk back and go get my phone. She said, no, I got in the car with them. I said, you got in the car with an old man who just pulled up alongside you and said, I'll take you wherever you want to go. Yeah. Okay, so I'm upset, all right? Not the wise thing to do. I would have done things a little differently. We go through church, you know, and so then we're driving home. And so we're driving home, we're getting close to our apartment. I said, so exactly where did you leave your car when it broke down? Where is it? She starts going, well, it was over there. What do you mean it was over there? Where did you leave your car? It was over there. And it's not there anymore? No, it's not there. It's not there anymore. Well, where is your car? I don't know. What do you mean? You don't just misplace a vehicle, right? Where was your car? It was right there. Well, where is it now? I don't know. And so we're just looking. We're just stopped at this red light, just looking at this place where the car should be, but it's not. And I'm just continuing to look at it. Kate, where is your car? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, did you give the keys to the mass murderer that you got in the car with? Did you call somebody? Did you tell somebody? She goes, no, I just thought it'd be fine right there, so I just put it in park. And it was right there. And so I took her home, and I just start driving around town looking for this car that's supposed to be somewhere else. And I'm calling people and everything else, and it turns out that when she broke down, she was in the middle of an intersection. And because of where the snow was, it looked like it was a curb, but it was not. And so what ended up happening is I called my senior pastor, and he said, call the police and ask them if they know. And the police said, oh, yeah, are you the one that left that white car in the middle of the intersection? I said, well, no, it wasn't me. It was my wife. You know, and he's like, well, why didn't you go find her and help her? And I'm like, this is fine. She had a mass murderer that picked her up and told her he'd take her anywhere she wanted to go. But anyway, it got picked up. It got towed. Got taken to a lot. That was a very nice little fine to pay for that towing expense. But anyway, went back to the apartment. And I can tell you this. I'm not going to give you the details because you don't need to know. But it was not a pretty day in the house, in the Davis household that day. I did not respond the best. I was angry. I was upset. I did not understand why what happened happened. And so, you know, Kate didn't talk to me for 3 days. That was great. And she was very upset. I think I made her cry a couple times. And it was not a good day. But here's the point of my story, okay? What happened in that situation? I always look back at that, and it was probably the worst I've ever responded to my wife, the meanest I've ever been. And I should probably say, every time I tell a story, I should probably say, honey, I'm sorry, all right, wherever you are, there you are. I'm sorry, I should not have done this. But here's what I want you to catch, okay? My wife messed up, all right? She failed in that moment. But here's the biggest part of this story. In my response to her failure, I failed my wife. Okay? In how I responded, reacted to her failure, I failed her. And here's the thing. My failure was a bigger failure than her failure. Because while she forgot her phone, got in the car with a potential mass murderer, we don't know, and lost the vehicle, I failed to uphold my commitment to, in sickness and in health, in good times and bad times, be my wife's teammate. And that's the thing I want you to think about today as we're going through this today, because I don't think we grasp this concept very well, is many times we fail the failure. And although many times their failure is what starts the flow of incidents, it's our failure that brings an end to a lot of stuff. And so I want you to think about that today, and I want you to think about your failures and the damage that our failure to failures can actually bring. Because that was the worst part of my story, and I think we've all experienced it at one time or another. Somebody has failed us, and your response and what you do is so important, so vital. And we've got to start paying attention to not just the failure, but our reaction to the failure. And what I've seen over my life, what tends to be kind of the three options that people have, the three things that people usually, you know, fall down on, is people react to failure one of three ways, okay? One of three ways. The first one is this. The first one is they fight. First option is to fight. We fight back when somebody fails us. Somebody fails us and we seek revenge. We get payback. Okay, you just got me, now I'm going to get mine, right? You just went out and you just spent your paycheck without talking to me, and so guess what I'm going to do? The next paycheck I get, I'm going to go out and I'm going to spend the money however I want because you got to do that, so now I'm going to get you back, and I'm going to do that. You know? You got me, I'm going to get you. It's an eye for an eye, and I'm going to get revenge. And here's the thing. I'm not just going to get revenge. I'm just not going to get what I feel like you owe me because you took from me, but then I'm not going to let you get away with this. So guess what? I'm going to call my mom. Yeah, that's right. I'm going to call my mom, and I'm going to tell her what you did because I want her to think badly of you. And I'm going to call my siblings, And I'm going to rally a whole team, all right? It's Team Michael against Team Kate. That's right. And I'm not just going to call my family. I'm going to call yours, right? I'm going to call your mama. You're going to get a call from your mama tonight, and she's going to tell you how bad of a boy you are, right? That's what's going to happen, because I'm going to get you. Because you failed me, you messed up, you let me down, and so I'm going to get you back. And we fight, right? We fight in so many different ways and so many different tactics, and we see it all the time. We think people owe us, so I'm gonna get mine. I'm gonna pay this debt by I'm gonna go do the same thing. I'm gonna go cheat on you. You lied to me, so now I'm gonna lie to you. You spent money you weren't supposed to spend, so now I'm gonna go spend money I'm not supposed to. You dissed me, you insulted me, so now I'm gonna insult you back. And I'm not gonna let you get away with it. I'm gonna tell people. I'm gonna Facebook about it. I'm gonna tell my small group about it. I'm gonna call Pastor. That's what I'm gonna do. He's gonna know about it. Now I'm gonna get people to think poorly and badly of you. And the devil loves when we do this, right? The devil, he just sits back and he laughs. And you know that little part of you that feels good whenever you do fight back? That's what it is. You're feeling a little bit of Satan's joy is what you're feeling. Because you're destroying even more than what's already been destroyed. The other option is this, is we ignore the problem. That's the second option. We ignore it. We ignore it when we withdraw. I'm not going to talk about this. I don't want a solution. I don't want to try to figure this out. I don't want to try to work on this. I don't want to go to counseling. I don't want to talk to a counselor. I don't want to go to a marriage counselor. I'm sure not going to go talk to pastor about this. No way. I don't want to talk to anybody about this. I'm okay with telling other people about it so I can rally my team up. Those are the people I'm going to tell. I'm going to tell my family. I'm going to tell my friends. I'm going to tell my coworkers because they all side with me and they're going to hate you. That makes me feel better. But I'm not going to go talk to anybody who might look at this as an unbiased situation where I might, God forbid, have to own a little bit of stake in this and take a little bit of responsibility for what happened. That's not going to happen. So I'm going to ignore this. I'm going to sweep it under the rug. I don't want to do anything to fix it. I don't want to fight for my marriage. I don't want to fight for my kids. I don't want to fight for this job. I don't want to fight for this relationship. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm just going to let it go by. I'm not going to do anything to fix it. And the devil likes when we do that too. The devil loves when we don't fight for our marriages and our relationships and our jobs. And we're basically what we do is we just treat each other as disposable. And we say, it's fine. I'm not going to try to fix this solution. That's fine. I'll divorce you and I'll go get another. I'll go get married again. I don't need this. So I'll just go get another one. You know what? I don't need to have a conversation with this. I don't want to try to work this out. I don't want to talk about it. You know what? I'll go find another church. I'll just go get another church. I'll just start over fresh somewhere else. And I'm just going to ignore this like it never even happened. And I'm just going to let this pass by, and we're just going to ignore it. And the devil loves when we do that because we don't fight for anything. We treat each other as disposable, and we just drop it. We just drop the ball. And that can be very, very dangerous. And that's the thing I want you to understand, is that whenever we react to failure this way, it's so crucial because sometimes it's their failure that's the start. But it's our failure to react the right way, and it actually brings about the end. Because although there's been a failure, there's a marriage that's still salvageable. There's a relationship that can still be healed. There's a connection, and there's a community that can still be whole. But when we choose to fight or when we choose to ignore, we just decide to bring the end. You know, and that's the scary part of how all of this works, right? What's the biggest fear in people's minds when it comes to nuclear war? You know, when we talk about nuclear war and nuclear missiles, what's the biggest fear, right? It's not the first one that people are worried about. What is it? It's the second one. And the one that we know is going to come of that. And what's our biggest fear when it comes to nuclear war is that somebody will fire a missile, and then they'll fire a missile, and then they'll fire a missile, and then they'll fire a missile until everything is devastated to the point where it can't ever be the same again, right? That's what we're worried about. We're not worried about the first one. We're worried about the war and the devastation that it can bring afterwards. See, and that's the thing. When somebody drops an F-bomb in your life, do you want to start a war that could bring an end? That could bring a lot of devastation and a lot of things that can't ever be the same again? That can actually have a rippling effect and actually have casualties in your family, in your workplace, in your relationships, in your kids' lives? Or do you want to have peace? Do you want to try to mend it? And that's where the third option comes in really, really handy. and that is to forgive. The third option is to forgive. See, forgiveness allows us to fight for someone instead of fighting with someone. When we choose to forgive, we say, you know what? I want peace over war. I want to fight for our marriage, for our relationship, for our family, for this environment, for our community, instead of fighting with, instead of proving my point, instead of winning this war, I want what's best for us. And I don't want a war, and I don't want casualties. I want to fight for us. That's what forgiveness is. It's this chance for us to make peace and not war. And it's canceling that debt that we believe that people owe us. And here's the thing. If you're a Christian, you have to do this, okay? If you're a Christian, this is a must, and I'm going to get into that. But if you're not a Christian, I hope that today I can show you why this is a better option, because quite honestly, none of this probably makes sense to you, because it just, you know, we focus when we're not Christians so much on what's fair, and Christians do it too, but it's just a little bit different. So if you're not a Christian today, I want to try to convince you, if you will, that this is a better option when somebody fails you. But I want to get this straight. If you are a Christian, if you claim today to follow Christ and love God, this is a must. Like, there's no buts about it. Like, if you're like, no, I can't forgive, well, hand your Christian card over to me, okay? We didn't really hand those out. But it's a must. It's a must. And it's biblical. And you're really barking up the wrong tree if you choose not to, okay? So I want to get into, we're just going to talk about one verse today, but there's so much here to unpack. And originally when I had like many, many verses, but I just wanted to slice it down, trim it down, and talk about this, because there's so much here when Paul talks about this. The Apostle Paul, he talks about this to the church, the Christians in Colossae. They're known as the Colossians. And it's in Colossians 3:13. And what he said is just, it's impacted my life just this week in a huge, huge way. And this is what he says at the beginning of it. He says, make allowance for each other's faults. Well, there's a chair there. Make allowance for each other's faults. Now, what does that word allowance mean? I was studying that this week, and I've preached on this verse so many times, and then God just kind of caught my eye, and I kept digging into that word that's highlighted there. Allowance. Make allowances for each other's faults. Do you know what that word means? It means the amount permitted. Make an amount permitted for each other's faults. Here's how I apply that in my mind practically. Is what I feel like Paul is saying is budget for people's failures. Anybody have a budget? You all should. Okay? When you budget, You have this document, or you have this form, you have this area where you expect to give a certain amount for this, right? You expect to invest or to lose a certain amount towards this thing, towards your grocery bill, towards your phone bill, towards your electric, whatever it may be. You budget for it. You plan for it, okay? So what I hear Paul saying in that, make allowance for each other's faults, is here's what is best for you to do. I want you to budget for each other's failures. A more cynical way of putting it, I want you to plan for people to fail. Now that sounds really cynical, right? Really negative. I'm going to turn it around and put it in a different light for you, okay? But just to make practical sense for you, I want you to plan for people's failures, for people's faults, for people's weaknesses, for people's shortcomings. I want you in your head to mentally prepare yourself and emotionally prepare yourself for the people around you to come up short, to be weak, to fail, and to mess up. Now, that's a cynical way of putting it, but it makes sense. But here's really what I think Paul's really saying, and this is a much more loving way of putting it, and I actually think a loving thing to do for one another. And it's this: stop planning for people to be perfect. Does that make a little bit more sense? Stop planning for people to be perfect. Budget for it, make room for it, make an allowance for it. Because people aren't perfect. So stop planning for them to be perfect. Now, here's kind of what this looks like, okay? I'm going to paint you a picture in my own life, and I hope it makes sense to you. So you're at home, right? You're at home, and you're sitting on your couch, and you realize the house is very quiet. You turn the TV off, and the house is dead silent, right? Now, some of you think, I don't understand what's wrong. Here's the problem. You have two toddlers, okay? Now, if you're in the house, and it's quiet, and you have two toddlers that aren't asleep, you know somewhere there's a problem. Somebody is up to something bad somewhere, and now you have to go find it, right? So you go down the hallway, and you hear them in their room, and you go in that room, and your three-year-old Olivia, and this is just hypothetical, your three-year-old Olivia is in the floor with her markers, with a coloring book, and she is on her coloring book, and then she goes off her coloring book, right? And she is just marking in the floor. And her one-year-old brother, Brayden, decided, I want to play with markers too, but he thinks that the white walls are a better canvas. And so he has joined in as well, and he is creating his own piece of art on Olivia's white walls. Now, if you do not make an allowance for people's faults, if you have planned for your children to be perfect, what do? You walk in and you're just, you're in shock, right? How could this happen? What are you doing? Are you out of your mind? Have you ever looked at your children and just in your head said, are you out of your mind? You know, many times, right? And so you just look at them and you're like, are you out of your, what were you thinking? And you just react and you punish and you yell and you are angry, right? Now, that's never actually happened to me, okay? This is purely hypothetical, all right? But I plan for it too, okay? You with me? I plan for it to happen. In my head, I know that my kids at some point are going to do something like this. And here's the thing. If I plan for them to be perfect, I'm baffled. I just react. I punish. Just what comes out, comes out. But if I make an allowance for their faults, if I stop planning for them to be perfect, if I budget for them to have failures, what's different? Well, as a parent, what it looks like is I go, you know what? The house is quiet. Uh-oh. And I do. There's many times I walk through my house and I go around that corner and I don't know what I'm going to find, right? But if I make an allowance for their faults, if I budget for failures and I stop planning for them to be perfect, it's different. Because emotionally, I'm ready. In my mind, I'm ready. And what I believe and what I hold on to in my head and what I say to myself is, you know what? They are children. She's three, he's one. They have no concept of going off of pages. They have no concept of walls that shouldn't be touched or things that shouldn't be stained. You know what? It's okay. My kids are going to fail. They're going to make mistakes. There's going to be problems and there's going to be issues. And it's okay. Sometimes they have to take responsibility for that and sometimes a punishment is warranted. But a lot of the times, my reaction, it all depends on it. And I need to be graceful and I need to be loving and I need to be merciful. Okay, you see what this starts to create in you? When you make an allowance for each other's faults, where you stop planning for people to be perfect. Because see, that's the problem in a lot of your relationships and why when somebody fails you, it just devastates you so much. It's because in your relationships, you plan, you expect people to be perfect. So when your spouse messes up or they do something wrong, you're just devastated. You're just blown away. You're just like, oh, I thought when you took those vows, it was going to be a fairy tale, and you were never going to do anything wrong. I can't believe you did something wrong. I can't believe you failed me. I can't take this. It's just too much, you know? I just can't believe it. I just expected you were going to be my knight in shining armor forever, and that you'd never do anything wrong, right? And you're just blown away, and you're just devastated, and you're just like, well, if you're not going to be perfect, I'm not going to be perfect either, so get ready, because a storm is coming. But if you make an allowance for each other's faults, if you understand they're not going to be perfect, you actually kind of in your mind, plan for there to be bumps in the road in your marriage, in your life, where things go awry, where people make mistakes, where people forget to turn in a bill, where people get tempted by something and they give into it, where people think that they're doing something harmless and it turns out they're not. But if you make an allowance for each other's faults, then when it happens, you respond differently. You're prepared mentally and emotionally. You knew that this day was going to come. You knew that this bill was going to need to be collected. You budgeted for it, and you were ready for it. And now, instead of fighting with somebody, you're ready to fight for somebody because you were prepared. You were ready. Let's put this in the perspective of work, right? How many of you have said at work or gotten off work, and you're like, I just don't understand why nobody can do their job? You know? I come here, I do my job. I do my job perfectly. I don't understand why everybody else can't do their job and why I got to do their job for them. It's ridiculous, right? I'm going to go find a new place where everybody works perfectly, right? Everybody gets everything in on time. Everybody listens to one another. It's ridiculous because I do it perfectly all the time. I got no mistakes. That's what's up. No, you don't. But if you make an allowance for each other's faults, if you budget for people's failures, then you know what? When somebody comes in and they didn't get a good night's sleep and they got a lot of stuff going on in their family and they got a bad attitude and they're just not having it, it's okay. You're ready for it. It's all right. You've budgeted for that. You've allowed for that. You understand mentally, emotionally, people have bad days. People have nights where they don't get enough sleep. People have kids, and kids drive people crazy, right? People have times where they don't feel very good. And so, no, not everybody comes into work feeling 100%, ready to give their all, with the best attitude in the world, ready to serve every customer at 150%, right? And so, yeah, some emails come across poorly, some text messages come across poorly, some meetings don't go well. Sometimes interactions, people are stressed out and they're busy, and not everybody at work is going to do everything perfect. Think about that for a minute. As an employer, as an employee, as a team member, if you make an allowance for that, if you plan for that, if you budget for that, think how differently your relationships at work would go. To understand, I am coming into work and I am not planning for my boss or my teammates to do everything perfect today. And that's okay with me. I have budgeted for it. I am prepared for it. People are going to do things wrong. People are going to say things wrong. And that's okay. I'm ready for it. I've made an allowance for it. I've budgeted for it. I'm good. Think just for a minute how that would impact your attitude at work. Think about, again, what that would do in your marriages. Think about what that would do for you in your relationship with your kids. To have that with you, like, my kids are not going to be perfect. They're going to make mistakes. It's okay. I'm ready for it. I'm prepared for it, emotionally, mentally. I'm ready. It's going to come. It's going to happen, and I know. And it's okay. I'm going to respond to it differently. Think about the impact that could have. And here's the thing. Here's the thing, okay? It is unfair of you. It is unfair of you to expect everybody else to be perfect because you're not. In the same way that you're human and you make mistakes and you slip up and you write bad emails or text messages and you say things wrong in meetings and sometimes you have moments and you have bad days and you have times you don't feel good and you have times you don't get enough sleep and you have family drama and it spills into other environments, so does everybody else. And here's the thing, it's unfair of you to expect your spouse, your kids, your boss, your coworkers, your pastor, your president to be perfect all the time, because you're not perfect all the time. So you need to make an allowance for other people's faults. You need to budget for it, and you need to stop expecting people to be perfect. But Michael, how much allowance do I give, right? A permitted amount. So what's the line? How much allowance do I give? Well, here's the problem, okay? If you're not a Christian today, you're not a Christian, you're going to have a hard time with this. This is going to be bad because you don't believe in a God or you don't follow a God or you don't, you know, worship a God or look up to a God. So here's the thing. When you don't have a God to follow, you make yourself God, okay? You're the God of your own universe. And so In your mind, it's going to be up to you. And here's what you're going to have a problem with. Unless you have failed the way they have failed, you're not going to be able to empathize with them. Does that make sense? So what is this? What it is, like, I never cheated on my spouse. I can't believe they did that. That's terrible of them. I wouldn't. I would divorce them. I would pound them to the ground. I would stomp on them. I'd spit on them. I'd kick them out. I'd make them give you all the money in the world. That's what I do. I would never do that. I'm perfect when it comes to marriage. And so I would never do that. And so I wouldn't do it. See, that's the problem you're going to have. You can't empathize. You can't understand why they did what they did. And so you're just going to think punishment, fight, hurt, get revenge. That's all you're going to think about because you're the God of your own universe. And so you just look at your best understanding of the world, and you can't understand it because you've never done it. The only time you're going to be able to show any mercy, love, or react without fighting is if you've done it yourself and gone, you know what, I've lied before. You know, everybody does it. I've done it. You know, so I don't really think it's that big a deal. It's just a lie, you know. I do it all the time. And so you're going to be able to empathize with it. And that's how you react because you're the God of your universe because you have no God to look up to. But for Christians, if, again, you are a Christian in this room, if you're not a Christian, good luck. But if you are a Christian, here's the thing. We do have a God we serve. We do have a Savior that we look up to, and we do have an example to live by. And so the question for you, when you ask the question, how much of an allowance am I supposed to give? You need to ask the question like this. How much allowance has God given you? Because God made an allowance for your faults. And when a debt had to be given and a price had to be paid, a life had to be given, He looked at everybody's sins, past, current, and future. And He decided that everybody gets an allowance, and everybody gets mercy, and everybody gets grace, and everybody gets shown love. And before you could jump up on the cross that you deserved and that people wanted to hang you on, He jumped up there for you. And so if you're a Christian in this room and you ask, well, what's the line? What's too far? God didn't have a line. God didn't have a limit. What was limitless was His love. And that's exactly what Paul gets into next. He's a smart guy. He knew where people would go. This is what he says next. Make allowances for each other's faults and forgive anyone who offends you. There's that word. There's that third option again. Forgiveness. So forgive anyone who offends you. You've made a budget for it. You've made an allowance for it. So now when they do it, it's your job to forgive. But I don't want to forgive. But it's unfair. I think they need to, you know, I think they need to squirm a little bit. I think they deserve a little bit, you know, just a little bit of punishment. Just a little bit of me ignoring them, you know, just a little bit. And he says, well, here's what you need to remember. The Lord forgave you. So you must forgive others. You have no room to hang people up on crosses. You have no room to persecute or to punish or to hurt. Because when it came to you, you were not persecuted and you were not punished and you were not judged. Somebody took that on for you. Isn't that just amazing? Think about how much this could change the relationships in your life. To be able to look at the relationships and the people around you and think, you know what? I need to stop planning for people to be perfect. I've got these expectations that I put on my spouse, on my kids, on my coworkers, on my friends. And I keep expecting them to be this thing that may not even be achievable. But what if I started allowing them to have faults, allowance for them to fail? What if I started stop planning them to be perfect and started planning for future failures, for their faults, for their weaknesses, because I have them too? Man, I think it'd be a game changer. I think another part of this and what we need to do, and we actually talked about it in our learning environment this week upstairs in the community room. We're almost done with it. But there was something, we were watching a study by Andy Stanley, and there was something amazing that Andy Stanley said that we have to understand when it comes to God. So many times he had said there's this misconception. So many times we think that God wants from us, right? We always think, what does God want from me? And he says, here's the thing. He is our Father in heaven. He loves us. So here's the thing. God doesn't want from us. He wants for us. Understand that God doesn't want something from you. God wants something for you. And here's the thing when it comes to our relationships. So many times we look at our relationships and we want from people. We even sometimes verbally say it to our kids. I just want you to listen to me, right? Mom, what do you want? I just want you to do what I tell you. That's what I want. This is what I want. I want you to behave. I want you to be obedient. I want you to stop being such a slob. I want you to take me out on more dates. I want you to be my friend. I want you to listen more. I want you to give me better advice. I want you to hang out with me more. I want, I want, I want, I want. What would happen if in our relationships we stopped wanting from people and we started wanting for people? What if we stopped using people as this thing that we suck from? And instead started looking at people in relationships as people to get something for, to give something to have a relationship with where we don't expect from, but we want for. And we stopped wanting perfection. But what we wanted for was a loving relationship and a relationship that we will always fight for, discuss, seek help about, whatever it takes, because we don't want to fight with you because I don't want anything from you. I want for you. I want to fight for you. That's a different kind of relationship. That is love. Imagine doing that. Imagine making an allowance for your spouse's faults. Imagine just sitting down with your spouse and saying, honey, I do not expect you to be perfect. You have your faults, you have your failures, you have your weaknesses, you have things in your past who have shaped and molded who you are, but I love you, and that will never change. And I will always fight for you. I will always be on your team, and I will always stand beside you. And I just want you to know, no matter what happens, I am with you, and I love you. Imagine saying that to your spouse. Imagine saying that to your kids. Especially your teenagers, because I don't think we do this enough with teenagers. We're so worried about what teenagers are going to do that we don't, you know, understand this all the time. Imagine sitting down with your kid and explaining this to your kid. Honey, I want you to know, I will always love you. I am always for you. I hope it doesn't come across as all these things I expect from you. You know what? I want you to know I am for you. I will always be your dad. I will always be your mom. I will always support you. I will always have your back 100%. I want you to know I am for you. And no matter what you do, no matter how you fail, I have had my failures as a parent as well. And so it's okay. I will always be for you. I think if we just started to budget that in our mind, allowance for people's faults, stop expecting our kids to be perfect because you weren't perfect either. And you know this is a parent too, and we've got to do this too. We've got to stop expecting our parents to be perfect. Because somewhere in our mind we thought, they're my dad, they're my mom, they should know better. No, they didn't. Do you know everything that you're supposed to know and do everything you're supposed to do? Are you a perfect parent? No. So stop expecting your mom and dad to be perfect. Give your parents an allowance. Give your kids an allowance. And you will see your family become closer, more connected, and more loving than ever. You've got to do that. Think about, again, how it could change your job. Make an allowance for each other's faults. Understanding that team members and co-workers and bosses, they're going to have bad days. And make an allowance for it. I think that would be a game changer in our relationships. I know it's been something I've been thinking about all week. Every time my kids do something, every time a discussion comes up, every time, you know what? Got to allow for people's failures. It's okay. You didn't expect them to be perfect. You don't put that pressure on them. They're not going to be perfect. You're not perfect. It's okay. We've got to fight for our relationships instead of fighting for people. And that's what I want to see all of us do. I think it could transform our lives and it could transform our relationships. And it can put us even closer to that image of Jesus, that person, that spouse, father, that mother, that employee, that boss, that God created us to be. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning, as you have spoken to us today, as we look at this scripture verse, God, somebody maybe right now has failed us recently. And God, maybe our reaction to it was not the best. Maybe our reaction this morning was not the most loving, not the most Christ-like. Maybe we did. We fought. Maybe we ignored. Maybe, God, what we did was something that inside gave us joy that we weren't supposed to feel because it was fighting back. But God, this morning, I pray that what we would do is allow ourselves to forgive. That God, that person who failed us, that we would cancel their debts, that we would forgive them. Because God, this morning, it's been a real realization this morning that you have forgiven us. You jumped on our cross that we deserved, where we should have been hung. You allowed your son to be hanged. For us to pay that debt, to take that burden off of us. And God, your love has been limitless for us. And so God, I pray that our love as followers of Christ would be limitless as well. That we would be people who would be focused on making peace instead of war. That although their failure was the start of this, that we would not continue to fail in order to bring an end to a marriage, to a relationship, to a family, to a career, to a community, to a neighborhood. God, I pray that we would be people who would strive for peace and that we would take the love that you've shown us and that we would reflect it to others. And God, as we leave here today, I pray that inside of us, you would help us begin to shape and think about what it would look like to make an allowance for one another's faults, for our kids' faults, for our spouse's faults, for our parents' faults, for our coworkers' faults, for our students' faults. God, will you just begin to shape and mold and transform our attitude from expecting people to be perfect to planning for people to have bad days, for people to have bad attitudes, for people to not feel good, for people to not say everything correctly. God, will you just begin to help us to budget for that, plan for that, and make an allowance for that? Because that is what you did for us through your Son, Jesus Christ. So God, that's our prayer this morning. I pray that we would live that out this week, that we would begin to have our minds and our hearts, our emotions transformed by you. We pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, I hope that you guys live that out this week. Remember to start making allowance for each other's faults. I'm so glad that you guys chose to spend this hour with us. I hope that you guys enjoy the rest of your day with your family and being able to, you know, recover and get rest. You guys go home, have some fun, enjoy your families. Why don't you guys stand, shake hands with somebody next to you, tell them that you're so glad you got to see them this morning. Stay around and hang out. I hope you guys have a great day.